Regent Hammons?
Here.
Regent Helm?
Here.
Regent Milliken? Absent. Regent Nichols?
Present.
Regent Spiller?
Present.
Vice Chair Thomas?
Present.
Chair West?
Present.
Regent Ross Robinson?
Present.
We have 10 regents present.
All right, thank you very much. And we, our next item of business is approval of two sets of minutes. One was the third quarterly meeting that was held on August 8th, 2025. Does anyone have any changes or any issues with those minutes? And then we also have the minutes from the special call meeting on September 25th, 2025. Does anybody have any changes to those minutes? Hearing none, I will accept a motion to approve the minutes for both of the meetings that we just discussed.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. And our first item of business today is academic affairs. And that will go to Secretary Gibson.
We can do that here.
Oh, Derek, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I'm
thinking of students. I'm sorry. I was on student affairs, academic affairs.
Okay. First item of Academic Affairs Committee will be approval of academic program suspension. Provost Fisher.
Yeah, we would like to suspend the Bachelor of Science in Molecular Biotechnology. It was put forward by the faculty for two reasons. One, we've had low enrollments, and two, it will be incorporated as a concentration within the biological sciences. So you will still have a chance to do that just as a concentration.
Thank you. We discussed it at the previous meeting. So I'll take a motion.
So moved.
Second. And a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next item two is approval of emeritus appointments.
Yeah, we have three emeritus appointments today that I told you about last time. It's Dr. Molly Kirby from the Department of Sociology, Dr. Stacy Wilson, professor from the School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, and Dr. Margaret Gripshover, a professor from the Department of Earth, Environment, and Atmospheric Sciences. I'd like to get those people approved. Two are here who would love to say a few words.
They want to come forward.
Do you want the motion first, or do you want them first?
Well, we can go whichever way you would like.
Well, let's make the motion.
Yeah, I figured that way they are emeritus.
Then they can say whatever they want.
Great. Dr. Kirby?
Maybe you can go first if she will. I don't care. Is that fine?
I don't care. One of you guys stand up. Thank you.
I want to thank everyone, board, and the administration, faculty, and staff, and the wonderful students we have here at Western. Last month, I received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Southeastern Division of the American Association of Geographers, and I thought that was going to be my high point. And then this appointment came, so I got my Lifetime Achievement, and now this is my afterlife. So I will live long and forever and keep Western in my heart, and I thank you so much. And I continue to contribute to the department and university in any way that I can. I want to especially thank Dr. Leslie North and my EAS team members for their support. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I'll go next. I will make it short. If you all know, I can go on and on and on, so I won't. But I spent 40 years on this hill. I came as a student in 1985. This was my third school. I didn't make it at the other two because the other universities didn't know how to treat first-gen students, and I got my hand held through my whole undergraduate. Didn't know what a master's was. Somebody said you should do that. And I'm like, well, I'll get one of those too. So I have an undergraduate and a master's from WKU and a graduate certificate. And didn't have to pay for my PhD either at University of Louisville because I worked here. But I have held all kinds of positions here. I started out in food services working. I was on the paint crew. I worked in IT. I've worked in the library. I worked in enrollment management, where it's where I decided to be a provost. That's what I wanted to do. And I will say that I've learned as much about what I didn't want to do as what I wanted to do in my career at WKU. But I will say that one of my dreams was to be an emeritus faculty at some point. I didn't know whether it would be at WKU or not. I'm very proud that it is at my alma mater. And I will sign that on everything I got. It'll be on the bottom of my emails before I get home. It'll be on everything I write and everything I do on my web pages. And I want to thank you all. And I really enjoyed working with the board through my appointment on the president's cabinet. And thank you all so much.
Dr. Wilson isn't here, but she sent a note for me to read. So I would like to have a chance to read. I am honored to be named as an emeritus faculty member at WKU. I have been blessed by my time on the Hill. I am proud of the initiatives in which I played a role and cherish the relationships I have within the WKU community. Thank you for this honor.
Yay, thanks.
There's one last item today.
Yeah. Approval of sabbatical leave.
Yeah, under the guidelines that are put forth in the policy, we have to approve sabbaticals before the spring semester comes, and this is the last before the spring semester. So what you have in front of you is 12 names that have gone through a vetting process that not only is done by their chair, but done by a committee in the college, done by the dean, approved by the dean, and then approved by myself. And they have to do a proposal, and to be even able to be in a sabbatical, they also have to have, if they had a previous sabbatical, have put in a telling us what they did and what was the outcome and what was the productivity of that earlier sabbatical. So these people all meet the guidelines and are ready to go either on a full year or semester sabbatical over the next year.
We have a motion for approval of sabbatical leave.
Second
by Rush. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Anything else for us?
That's it.
Madam Chair, concludes business that committee.
Okay, thank you, Regional. Our next committee is Finance, Budget, and Audit. Regent Barty.
Thank you, Chair Witt. We have consent agenda items FBA 1 through 4. Are there any questions or comments before we ask for a motion? If not, I ask for a motion to approve these consent agenda items.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Spiller.
Second.
Second by Regent Dennison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That concludes the
Record time. I think that's well. Okay, and now we come to the executive committee, and the first action item is acceptance of titles for properties. Susan?
So I really don't have anything to add since we presented at the last meeting, but happy. I know that Dr. Tubis is here and can answer any questions.
Okay, does anybody have any questions? Okay, being none, then I'll accept the motion for acceptance of title for property.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And motion passes. Our next item of business was or is an authorization to grant easement to Warren County Water District.
Yes.
And that was also discussed at our committee meetings. Does anybody have any questions about that easement? Okay, being none, I'll accept a motion to grant the easement.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. And finally, we have another easement, and that is granted to WRECC. What does that stand for?
Rural
Electric. Okay. That's about them. Anybody have any questions of Susan about that easement? All right, and then I'll accept a motion to authorize the easement.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. A second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
The motion passes. Our next action item is the approval of anti-Semitism policy. Andrea, do you want to speak to that?
Yes. Take two.
Take two.
So you now have before you a copy of the anti-Semitism policy that's required by Senate Joint Resolution 55. So universities are required to have this policy in place by January 1 of 26. This policy prohibits discrimination on the basis of national origin, ethnicity, and religion. And it has some reporting requirements for the university as well as some notification requirements for the university. Pursuant to the Senate Joint Resolution, this policy may sunset in June of 28. So that's, I think, the rationale for the Senate Joint Resolution rather than regular bill-making process. I'll take any questions you may have about the policy. It mirrors the Senate Joint Resolution, including the definition of anti-Semitism.
Any questions? None. I will accept the motion to approve the anti-Semitism policy. Any further discussion? Second.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The anti-Semitism policy passes. And then we move on to action item 5, which is approval of pre-development agreement with Gilbane. And that is going to be presentable.
Thank you, Chair West, and thanks for all of you who spent some time touring our residential facilities this morning. We have two guests with us, Jillian from B&D and Mark from Baird. I'll allow them to introduce themselves, if you would. Jillian first.
Thing. It's great to be with you all again. My name is Julian Sarastume and I work with Brass Brand on Waving. We are a national campus advisor with a specialization in P3s, and we have worked with the university for many years, but over the past 6 months we've sat on the owner's advisory team for the housing project. So we're not a developer, we're a firm down the university's side. Mark.
Mark Rawlings with Baird. We are financial advisor to the university, capacity we've served in for most of the last 20 years. We operate as advisor not only to WKU, but to all of the public universities in the state of Kentucky and issuers really all across the Commonwealth of all stripes. Also, I'm a 2003 alum of WKU, so excited to be here today and to talk through this stuff with you guys.
So very thankful for the advice and guidance of national professionals. But I want to provide some context for the conversation and hopeful approval that we have today of a path forward for our residential facilities at Western Kentucky University. I was reminded of a conversation that I was included in with the Student Life Foundation in the fall of 2022. And in that conversation, we talked about the other half of the first year village replacing Douglas Keene and Hugh Pullen Halls and a plan to go beyond that. I don't have to remind you of the challenges that we faced in our three flagship residence halls in 24 and 25. Hopefully, those will be on par, at least Regents and Normal, to reopen in the fall of 27. But for us as an institution, we have to be able to make progress on our housing. And unfortunately, where the Student Life Foundation finds itself is unable to really carry more debt to do the projects that are necessary for us as an institution and to make progress on some other portions of university responsibilities around the fiscal plan. I said last spring that I thought the only way forward was a public-private partnership, an innovation that universities have been using now for about 15
maybe 20 years. But really in the past decade have taken off, and you've seen some of these in the Commonwealth. And so we began an exploration of, is there a way for us to meet the needs of our students, maintain affordability, and update our housing in such a way that it becomes an advantage for the university instead of a barrier for us to overcome in recruitment. And I think that we've done a good job navigating the past year in collaboration with the Student Life Foundation. And I want to say this from the outset. I appreciate everything the SLF has done for this university, and they have been nothing but good partners in trying to figure out a path forward. What we're going to talk about today is what I believe is that path. And we have been having this conversation in depth for 6 months, but really began last February. We thought there was a potential of an issue with Regions and Normal. And so what we have today is an opportunity to move forward with a eventual construction of a large project, but more importantly, a partner that will help ensure that our housing for students meets what we would expect for our families, and that would be an attractor to our campus, much like Regents and Normal have been. This is a complex activity. There's a lot more work to go. This is actually the beginning of the real work, essentially the selection of a partner. But I'm really proud of both the process we used, the drivers of that process, and where we come to today, which is the selection of that partner. And so with that, Julian, I will turn it over to you. Julian and I will go back and forth. Dear board members, if you have questions, please pause, interrupt, and dive in. We want to make this as informative as possible for you. And so, Julian, it's yours.
Sure thing. So what I would like to do in this presentation is really bring you all through, first of all, where we are in the process. So as President Cohen mentioned, we are really at the moment now in partner selection, and the item before the board today is a PDA. We still have a lot of work to do to finalize many details of the project design of the deal itself. So I'll go into that and sort of what we expect over the next year and next 2 years, really, as we're building this out. I'll also talk a little bit about the objectives of this project. Those objectives are important not just for the university, but also for the P3 partner. One of the biggest risks we find in these projects is if there's misalignment. And so I feel very confident and comfortable with the fact that from day one, we have shared what we need housing to be with the private market, and then we've been working with them really shoulder to shoulder for the last 3 months to come to a solution that really has those objectives at its core. I'll also talk a little bit about the planned construction projects, the kind of physical reality that we're exploring now with that partner, the selection process for the partner, and how we really use that in order to come to an advantageous arrangement for the university. And also a little bit about the financial picture that's taking shape out of this and some of the key benefits for that for the university. And then finally, what I'll close on is just a view of next steps for this board and for the university. Right now, we're at the PDA stage. We'll eventually come to a much broader set of agreements, and we want to make sure that the university community is informed and participating as we move forward in that process. So to start, I'll just touch on the schedule here. So as President Devaney mentioned, really since February, we've been engaged in planning this out, in going through that selection process with the private market. And then only since October have we been working directly with a single firm on advancing pre-development activities. So that includes defining a scope for housing renovations, creating a fully articulated design for a new phase one project, and beginning to arrange the financing and operations package that we'll need in order to deliver really a transformative investment in housing for the university. So the item that is before the board today is a pre-development agreement. What we hope that will do is unlock the ability of the designers and the many highly qualified firms who are supporting this effort to advance design fees and funding in order to make sure that we meet our objective of delivering a new phase one project in May, or beginning in May of 26, but then opening in the fall of 2028, which is a very, very fast schedule. So I'll go into later specifically what physical components, what projects are included within the P3, but I just want to emphasize that we are very early in this process still today. I'll share with you the items of which we are certain, today, but we expect to continue to update the board and the university as we move forward and formalize the design and the particular arrangement that we're talking about. To start, I wanted to just double down on some of these objectives. And as I mentioned before, you know, Grocer and Dunleavy has done quite a lot in green projects across the country in our history. We find that one of the core risks in embarking on a project like this is a misalignment of expectations between the partner and the university. There are plenty of solutions and plenty of ways for a PC partner to bring expertise and benefits to campus, but if the two can't align on what those are from an early stage, then there's always a risk of the project not moving forward. So it was very important for us to clarify these early on before we move forward with partner selection or with pre-development. And I think that that's part of the reason why we've really been able to move this forward successfully is we are very certain about what housing needs to be for the university, and the partnership that we've selected at this point has responded to that. So first, we want to make sure that we're providing a world-class housing experience to all WKU students. So housing is not a detriment to recruitment or student success or retention, but is actually additive. We also want to make sure that there are mechanisms in the deal to ensure that housing quality is consistent, predictable, and safety is assured. Right now, we are dealing with the hangover from issues in flagship residence halls, and we want to make sure that the partnership that we enter into protects against any kind of unpredictability moving forward. We know that the private partner is going to bring a lot of expertise in doing this, but we also wanted to make sure that WKU remains in the driver's seat for any kind of partnership. So housing is an integral part of the university's mission of student life, and so things like setting rates, maintaining affordability, maintaining housing policies, and improving plans and operations, that all needs to remain within the university's scope of responsibility, and we want to make sure that the partner understands that. Right, so we're maintaining control, maintaining WKU in the driver's seat, in some ways more so than has been true historically with the Student Life Foundation, while relying on the partner to bring to the table some of this creative thinking around other objectives. I mentioned this already, right, but one of the key reasons why we want WKU to have that authority is to maintain affordability for students. And I think that one of the great news items of this partnership so far is that we think we have a way to do that, to both invest the needed investment, but then also maintain affordability. And then we also want to move quickly, right? I mean, the university, Hilltopper, Regis and Normal being offline is a reputational risk. It's a student life concern. And so as quickly as we can move in order to return housing to this new state, to a better state,
Julian, I'm going to jump in there, and sure. So one of the great advantages this provides to us is more additional flexibility in discounting student rental rates for housing. We don't have that capacity right now. What you see as a rental rate is the rental rate you pay. And so what you have are students making choices about which halls to live in based upon price. But you can create a variety of student backgrounds in a hall by creating discounts. And so we think this is a way to combine our scholarship and effort with residence life effort to create even more compelling financial aid packages to get more students to enroll. So it's an enrollment issue for us. And then I'm going to comment and move quickly. Phase two of the first year village, which is what we're describing now as phase one in this project, is supposed to have been completed by, at the latest, fall 26. We're 2 years behind already, and that's, for me, that's something we have to continue to address. We knew we had a challenge with those facilities. We were hampered by Regents and Normal challenges and Hilltopper as well. We cannot allow that challenge to stop us from improving the residential experience for our students, and we have been not just working, but working hard. I'll acknowledge them at the end, but the entire leadership team of this institution has been essentially working two jobs since last February to ensure that we're able to do this today. Julie?
That's well put, and I think it ties very well to the next piece of content, which is really about, you know, what are we expecting from the partner, how are we splitting responsibilities. You know, the partner, what we want from them is a way on a phased approach to meeting housing objectives. As I mentioned, having that predictability, having a world-class experience. We want them to be able to finance this in order to accelerate the plan beyond what the SLF could do, and then make sure that operations moving forward are really defined with clear KPIs that we avoid any of the pitfalls that we find ourselves in today. But the university is still very much in the driver's seat here. So we are setting housing rates and policies. We're going to be approving all the key design and investment decisions that happen, not just in phase one, but also going forward. And also this, as President Gimona mentioned, gives us the opportunity in a way that we haven't had before to, you know, not just maintain residence life operation, but really transform it, really upgrade it for students. And also, you know, that's enabled by the fact that we can fully reinvest any surplus revenue that is received from the housing into things like discounting, programming, and student success in a way that hasn't been possible before.
Mark, will you talk to us a little bit about how this allows us to move forward in a way that we couldn't have without this in terms of financing?
Yeah. I think one of the, as President Cambodia had mentioned, the Student Life Foundation, it's not that they have no additional debt capacity per se. They have reached the end of their capacity with Regions Bank, who has been our partner for the construction of Norman Regents and Hilltopper Hall. All things considered, including the challenges with those buildings, Regents sort of reached the end of their rope in terms of they didn't really want any more exposure to that credit. So we were forced to find another lending partner to finance the repairs to Norman Regents Hall. But also the nature of their credit was much more constrained than what we're creating with this project. By moving some of the expenses to retained services, that gives us additional capacity for borrowing. The operation of the proposed partner is also much more efficient and has been demonstrated, I think, nationally to be much more efficient than what we've seen at the Student Life Foundation. I don't mean that as a knock to the Student Life Foundation, but when you're managing 50,000 plus beds all across the country, you can run those operations much more efficiently as opposed to having Sodexo and HRL and university facilities sort of managing the maintenance of buildings. You can be much more efficient, which lowers operating expenses, and that provides additional capacity for borrowing. So this mechanism, it provides additional borrowing capacity that allows us to actually finance these buildings solely from the revenues of the housing operation without support of university revenues. And it allows us to do so over a long period of time to support a large project, while, as President Cambodia mentioned, retaining control over rate setting, retaining control over discounting, but also ensuring that excess funds return to the university, which is a pretty marked difference from what we're seeing with the Student Life Foundation, where they retain any excess funds. And then also retain control over what those funds are spent on. Under this plan, that all returns that control back to the university.
Julian?
Mr. Julian,
I had a question.
Yes, please.
So on that last bullet point for the partner responsibilities, it still talks about like KPIs, as I understand them, key performance indicators. And so I would expect that part of that is at least a good chunk of that is based on student satisfaction. And so could you talk a little bit about how that would, like, has that been fleshed out? Have those conversations been started about what that would look like specifically?
Yes, we're actually negotiating that point right now with the partner. But I think historically, and what they presented to us, what would happen is students will be surveyed on a semester basis, residents of housing, and they will be asked about their satisfaction with facility conditions, and with response time, with essentially the operator's scope of work within the housing. A big part of the operator's management fee is going to be at risk based on the results of that satisfaction. So I don't want to get ahead of myself because we're negotiating some of the finer points on this. But if you wind up having issues with response time or with conditions and facilities, then the partner isn't paid, essentially. And I'll mention too, so that's part of the operational KPIs. Another item here is because we're financing this with a third-party foundation, which I can get into, there are very strict requirements that there be mandatory operating and replacement reserves, as well as a plan in order to make sure facilities are patched to 100% condition. So that's very much a requirement on the financing side as well. So in many ways, right, this is something where it's really written into the agreement. There has to be student satisfaction, but also just a proactive facilities plan. And not both the university and the partner are incentivized to do that.
Thank you.
Sure. So I think that overall, I think what this really is we're not just reinvesting in housing here, we're also endeavoring to strengthen WKU as an owner of housing. What I'll go into next is a little bit on the specific plan and what we hope to be investing in. And I'll emphasize here, President Cavone had mentioned this just before, but the kinds of projects that we're pursuing here have always been part of the vision for housing on campus. So this is a slide back from the 2022-2023 master plan for the Student Y Foundation. And there we had identified really the halls that we all know, Rhodes Harlan, Douglas Keene, Hugh Pullen, McCormick, as replacement targets, because you know not only do they have a huge amount of deferred maintenance within them, but they're also the least occupied, they have the lowest satisfaction, and the greatest issues in overall quality. So the plan was always to move forward on replacements of these facilities, and that would drive forward outcomes. The change now is that we have these urgent needs for stabilization in Hilltopper, Normal, and Regents. So part of the challenge was how do we make sure that that takes place, but then we're also continuing to move forward the housing plan. And so the precise phasing of this is we hope to begin with a 2028 opening on a new phase one project. This would be on the site of Hugh Poland and Douglas Keene, about 1,000 beds. Meanwhile, Regents and Normal are being renovated and Hilltopper is being demolished. What that will do is provide us sufficient surplus housing capacity to explore a much larger housing project on the Valley, which our current thinking is that this would target not just first-year students, but mostly second-year and opportunity students. We are not committing at this point to the program or sizing of that project, in part because we want to have the flexibility of reassessing in 2028 what demand is, what students are looking for. And our hypothesis there is that the opening of the phase one project is going to have a transformative impact on the perception of housing at WKU. And so we'll get a very different response from students about phase two versus if we ask them today. I'll mention right that we are currently working with Preferred Team on the facility design for phase one, and we hope to share more on that in the future. At this stage, we're just too advanced in order to get a confirmed look and feel, so we want to make sure that we share that at the appropriate time.
If you look at the buildings that are on the list to be replaced, what you see is by the fall of 2030, and ultimately with the demolition of both PFT and Minton, whenever that occurs, that we will have removed all community showers and facilities from our housing. They will all be hotel style, suite style, apartment style, or pod style, which is a tremendous advantage to us in the marketplace. When we think about our overlap groups, the institutions where people apply here and there and go there, it goes in this order: University of Kentucky, University of Louisville. Then we're now edging into the University of Tennessee and Indiana University as overlap groups. We have to get this done because those institutions are all ahead of us in their housing replacement. And so this will not just be a walk, it won't just be a run, it is going to be a leap for housing at WKU.
So having defined that really tall order of requirements, I'll talk now about how we came to our selected partner and who that partner is. We started broad, so back in the summer, we issued a request for qualifications. We provided in that RFQ the overall objectives, the scope of the project, what we were hoping to achieve with it, and we got responses from six highly qualified firms on this. From there, we shortlisted to four, issued an RFP. And then brought in two for best and final offer negotiations, focusing on fees and specific deal terms. And ultimately, the partner that we decided to move forward with, and we've been working with them since October, is Gilbane. I'll go into in a second the broader team that they bring with them, the expertise that they bring. But I'll just mention part of the benefit of this progressive selection process is, you know, one, we've had deep executive level engagement between the university and each of these partners through each step of the process. So at the RFP stage, we brought them all to campus for work sessions. We sought them down our best and final offer. And we had to do that because we knew we were not just choosing a project, but really choosing a partner. And we wanted to make sure that there was a good working relationship between the Gilbane team and WKU. And I'll say from my perspective, that really has been the case to date. We also wanted to make sure that we had negotiation on terms and fees, and a process like this really allows us to drill down and unlock a lot of value at this stage. So the Gilbane team is headed by Gilbane, but they bring quite a lot else with them. So Gilbane itself is a national developer with 150 years in business and extensive experience in campus P3s, as well as 50,000 plus student housing beds under management. So that gives them the ability to not just get this project done from a capacity perspective, an expertise perspective, but also really draw in the best practices nationwide. So they're able to share with us what works, what doesn't at peer campuses, at other campuses, and that is helping us sharpen our pencils, not just on the design, but also on the way we're operating this and that we're moving through the pre-development process. With them, they're also bringing in the Collegiate Housing Foundation. This is a national 501c3 owner, so they would sit essentially in a very similar seat to where the Student Life Foundation is today as the facility owner and issuer of taxes and debt for the project. That is underwritten by RBC Capital Markets, which also has an expertise in P3. And then Gilbane is also brought along their in-house O&M arm, input management, to explore facilities operations arrangements with the university, and Centrio as an energy advisor. And the reason for that is that the Student Life Foundation currently holds a chiller plant, and so we want to have their input as we're thinking about how ultimately that will move when we close on the transaction. So beyond that as well, I've highlighted here the design build team. Mackie Mitchell is a national student housing architect. Brian Russo is a national builder out of Champaign, Illinois. I'd say that in general, we've been working with this team now for about 4 weeks, and it's been really impressive. Not just how quickly we're moving on some of these projects, but also the kind of high-level thinking and expertise that we've brought to the table. We're hopeful that the paradigm that's set by the new housing project is really going to elevate housing on WKU and draw from some of those best practices nationally. I'll also mention, myself at BNB, Mark Rawlings at Baird, as well as our P3 Council, our National Counselor Ballots Council, Alice Barr and Dinsmore, we are working on the WKU advisory side. So as we move through design and financing, there are many sets of eyes that are on each step in the road. And our responsibility is to make sure that the university gets the best deal possible.
Mr. Julian? So in the design, I appreciate that we're getting national, that's awesome. Super excited about having people that have been doing this. But I know on every campus it's different. So maybe Dr. Lewis, could you talk to a little bit about how we're getting students involved in the process of what are we needing in these residence halls versus the ones that we would have built 2 years ago?
Yeah, I know we're working on a focus group, so that is a big next step that we'll see starting in the spring. So I know Dr. Sales and I have worked on, and others have worked on identifying different student organizations, even staff and faculty, to just kind of pull in to help us with some of those questions to better understand what students are hoping for in the new building.
There also was a broad student survey we conducted in the fall semester, this fall semester, asking them about their impressions of housing residence life, quality of housing, what they liked, what they didn't like, and where they lived.
Sure.
And what we continue to see is the halls that are most full and most in demand are the newer, higher quality halls, and the ones where folks are less satisfied are the ones where there's lower quality.
Sure.
And so what we want to do is take the bottom and move it to the top. And so the other thing I wanted to say, in addition to the national expertise, which was crucial for me in this conversation, not just to have the university have the best counsel available to us on the finance side, on the legal side, and on the development side, or at least the counsel on the development side, also to have good third-party oversight on these facilities to ensure that we are not going to have an issue with buildings being built and then approved by the same individuals. And so not only strong third-party oversight from outside organizations, also with our internal people having immediate access to every construction site whenever we want it. And the partner was absolutely comfortable with that, which was necessary for us.
Thank you, Ben.
So I'll shift back now to talk a little bit about the deal structure and financing. And I know, you know, Mark covered a lot of this before, and I've spoken about pieces here, but I think our goal here really is to strengthen the university as a housing provider and as an owner in this process. So, you know, the all told, the initial investment in housing is going to be substantial. So we're expecting, you know, north of $300 million to be invested in new construction, renovation, and defeasance of the existing debt. The good news is, at this stage, we think that is financeable without needing to raise any housing rates from current levels. So we are doing that while maintaining affordability for students. We also are securing that with existing housing revenues. So at this time, we don't expect to make any commitment of Western Kentucky's balance sheet or guaranteeing occupancy in the facilities. So not just from a, you know, rates perspective, but also from a balance sheet perspective, WKU is insulated in this project, similar to the way the SLF is, similar to the paradigm the SLF has today. I'll also mention, too, you know, the expected term on those bonds is long-term, but we expect at the end that facilities will revert to the university, and WKU has the ability to exit at any time by simply repaying the outstanding balance of the bonds. So, if something goes wrong, ultimately, the ultimate ownership and, you know, of housing remains with the university, and the university is really in the driver's seat throughout the partnership. I also mentioned this before, right, but Gilbane is incentivized to maintain high maintenance and operating standards. There are those shared incentives that I discussed, but also mandatory reserve fund and a need to have a reinvestment plan. The university is going to sit on the steering committee for those decisions going forward, so we'll always have visibility into what's happening in housing through that. And then there are some additional advantages too, like the idea that surplus cash flows, which currently are projected to be in north of $100 million over 40 years, so over the whole deal life cycle, those can actually be reinvested into things like rate discounts, scholarships, and student success. So it really puts the university in a much more empowered position. I'll also mention, too, that within this, within the pro forma, we are maintaining the current housing residence life budget. That really gives us an opportunity to, you know, think about what the future of residence life is on the campus. You know, what will it be like, for instance, when Catherine's staff don't have to worry about, you know, mold or facilities issues, and they can really think about how do we help students, you know, succeed in housing, stay in housing, and really have the best outcome possible. So we're hopeful that this structure is not just sustainable, but ultimately puts WKU in a much stronger position going forward. And now I don't want to repeat myself here, but I'll just flash this up. The difference from today, right, is that we are moving with a new foundation, so the ownership will shift. Facilities from the Student Life Foundation moving to the Collegiate Housing Foundation, which is a national 501c3. Rates today are set by SLF. In the future, they'll be set by WKU, and that gives WKU the ability to do things like provide discounts and assistance in housing going forward. Design and construction in the future will be jointly overseen by Gilbane and WKU. WKU must approve all plans going forward for housing and housing reinvestments. And then housing policy, housing residence life operations, those remain managed by the university. And then the other big difference right here is just that surplus revenues historically have gone to the SLF reserve fund. In the future, surplus revenues that are not reinvested in the housing or that don't go into reserve or return to WKU, which allows us to do more of that discounting that we discussed. So, as I mentioned before, the item before the board is a PDA, and the advantage of that now is that it will unlock the ability of the design team and the finance team to really advance their proposal going forward. We expect to come back before the board in February to talk through the phase one design and the preliminary financing package. So many of the items here that are currently conceptual will have far more detail behind them at that stage. And then the ultimate decision around project documents, including the ground lease and any agreements around O&M and development, would happen later to coincide with groundbreaking in early summer. I'll mention the PDA, so you all have that document now. Approximately $6 million in costs through July of 2026 are represented in that PDA. The thought is that this would be 100% funded by Gilbane up through financial close and then reimbursed through the financing. There are alternative provisions in the PDA for cost reimbursement in the event of project termination. Again, WKU does not have to sign on the project documents at the end of the day. But you know, risk share and how those costs are split ultimately depends on the cause of termination. So I don't want to get too much into the PDA here, but I'll mention that this is kind of the initial step to continue this process. And just you know, to emphasize something here too as well, I think that one of the benefits of really being transparent with Gilbane from day one on our objectives, it's created some really excellent shared incentives between the university team and the Gilbane team. Everybody, including myself, we all really want this project to move forward. We think it's the right thing for the university. It's sustainable. Parties are properly incentivized. And I think that one of the great benefits of the project, right, and the developers have mentioned this to us, is the executive team, the cabinet team at WKU, is spending a lot of their time sitting down, working directly with the partner in legal meetings, in financing meetings, in design meetings. So, as I mentioned before, one of the biggest risks in these projects is frequently that lack of alignment. So the partners are nervous, right, that we're not building the right thing, we're not having the right arrangement as we approach the deadline of financial close. I think here we're really, we've got a lot of very positive comments about the fact that there is such direct engagement with the university that it almost feels like one team at this point. So to me, that is not just it reflects very well on the university, but also it's allowing us to really do a project that is at a scale that really is setting a standard for the industry on this.
Julian, I'll jump in there. One of the things that you all found as you were socializing the possibility of this project, the reason we got such national interest is because it is transformative and it will go quickly. And at the fall of 2030, we will completely transform housing at the university. But to do that, it required the entire university cabinet, every person who's in a leadership position, Andrea Anderson chairing that effort, but really other folks co-chairing, and I don't want to go through it because I can't remember who's doing what on all the subcommittees. But what I would tell you is it is a great example of a leadership team that is not just aligned on the mission of the institution and our strategic plan, but is demonstrating that alignment every day through their engagement on building this partnership. And I'm really excited, hopefully, as we confirm the partnership, which has not yet happened, but we spent a lot of time getting to that point, for you get to meet some of these other national folks who are just world-class, best in their field, to help us achieve what is going to be remarkable for WKU in the future.
If I could make a comment, I would say thank you for your presentation. This feels, after the disappointments that we've had the last year or two, it feels a little bit like Phoenix rising out of the ashes. But clearly our biggest risk in this going forward is enrollment and maintaining it, which is one of the primary reasons to do it. But I guess one question I would ask, is there anything else we can be doing in the meantime to help enrollment? And spread the excitement of this project so that it becomes better known throughout the community, throughout the Commonwealth, and adjoining states. So if there is anything else that we can be doing there, I would think we would want to be doing it. And I do think PR concerning this project is going to be important. We need to spread the excitement of this, which I think it is exciting.
One of the things that we'll be doing for current students, and Rush, you and I were talking a bit about this, is ensuring that not only are we addressing the needs of the future, we're also going to invest $26 million approximately in current facilities that students are in today, helping make those and bringing those up to par as well. So I think that is part of it. I do believe and agree with you, Philip, that we've navigated a difficult period of time, but managed to do it in such a way that our first-year students are still very satisfied with their housing, particularly the ones who might have been disappointed not to be in Regents and Normal, but have been very excited to have an upgraded opportunity to be in a more upper-class residence hall with a hotel style, sharing, not having to share a community bathroom. But long-term, what this means for the university is growing and doubling our living learning communities, the ability to have even deeper engagement with faculty in the first year, and working to really bring that Oxbridge model to as many first-year students who want it, and then creating a follow-on for sophomores and juniors to continue that kind of deep academic engagement that's integrated into housing. So that's the long-term story. I'm going to turn around to John Mark and have you talk about how you are going to address that in the enrollment side.
Well, when this goes through, hopefully, what we plan to do is to shift the way in which we talk about the housing experience. This level of commitment signals a pretty dramatic shift in expectations for our student housing experience, and it lets us, and we're already in the process of building rollout plans for the spring semester, to talk about the transformation that this represents. Part of that is in physical buildings and the actual spaces on campus. But this also reaffirms the institution's recognition of the importance of housing and overall total experience. And so we're ready with some of those things to be able to start pushing those out in the spring semester and really make this institutional commitment to redefining the housing experience a cornerstone of our yield plan as we yield hopefully this fall class of students, and then also setting the expectation for underclassmen currently in high school that they're going to have an unmatched experience available to them here.
So that one question I've had, and Rush and I have talked about that. Current students, I think, to quote you, who said to me they've heard housing to the point where they're sick of it, I think is how he said it to me the other day. How will the transition work, especially during this upcoming semester and others, and responsibility? We don't want things to slip through the cracks as we're moving from one management team to another to make sure that students are still taken care of during this time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that once it's approved, we start working on is all of those agreements that lay out all the different touch points that different people are responsible for now that really will be integrated. And so one of the organizational challenges I believe that we've faced is, and Mark, you mentioned it, when you have multiple sub-organizations responsible for similar things, yet no one is really accountable for it, things can fall through the cracks. What I'm most excited about is the ability to set national standards around response time, around cleanliness, around every little piece of our residential experience that can be measured and that have one organization that's accountable for it. And so all of that work will happen during the spring semester as we have conversations around those additional agreements that follow on to the PDA. Julian, did I miss anything?
I think that was well put. I'll just mention part of that work lives in the agreements with the partner, but also we're not ignoring the need to really elevate WKU at the same time. So we think about the rearrangement as really an opportunity for us to look at residents' life and the way we arrange and say, how do we make, how do we use this to make it all this promise? What are the right seats and activities to really get us there? So, you know, in parallel to all of the work that's being done with the partner, we're also using this as an opportunity to think about the experience holistically, how we message that, and how that's ultimately done. Because it's great to use this crisis moment as an opportunity to come out of that and really provide something better to students. And I'll say we're starting that. We've already begun that process. So in terms of the question of asking how do we make sure nothing slips through the cracks, I think part of the answer is starting early, and those conversations are happening now.
And is that going to include, so we have three sets, I guess I would say, of groups of people, right? You have the housing student experience side that I think are funded by SLF. You have facilities management teams that are funded through SLF, and then you have Sodexo.
Right.
So there'll be three distinctively, I guess, options that we're going to have to look through. Or is that still the case for how our positions are set up? Have any of those transitioned already that I've missed?
They have not transitioned. So that's one of the conversations we have to have. What's the optimal organization for taking care of the facilities? But perhaps even more importantly, what's the optimal organization for taking care of our students, right? And so that is a different question. But the shift of M&O to a firm takes that off the responsibility of the institution. And so you have the ability to reimagine and re-envision what HRL could be without those responsibilities. And so there will be additional flexibility, additional opportunity, and my hope is that by the time we get to next summer, whatever the next version of HRL 2.0 is, can be unveiled. And so we can essentially leave that behind and talk about what the next iteration will be. And I think all of that's going to be dependent upon leadership, Martha and Catherine. I'm turning around to look at you, but not just Martha and Catherine. Every silo across the leadership team is going to be engaged in that because, it's, again, it's a team effort. It touches every part of our institution. I think it gets us a chance to be not just efficient, but deploy those scarce resources in the places where it's going to matter, and matter for me on retention and graduation rates. Right? So that's the end focus. It's not just pretty new buildings. It's how do we create the experience that ensures every student that comes here has a great chance of leaving with a degree.
So the February meeting, I anticipate that we'll see a plan for how that $26 million renovation will be used.
See you, Julius?
Yes.
And kind of following on that, are we going to get updates at the board meetings, at every board meeting, as to how everything is progressing? Because that would be very important to all.
For the next 4 years.
For the next 4 years. Some of us may not be here anymore. But yeah, that would be very, very helpful. Okay, I just want to make sure about that. And I just want to just make a comment that I've been very impressed with the board members and everybody really trying to familiarize themselves with kind of a process that was new to us, this P3 process, and asking a lot of questions and really digging into this. And also, I know that leadership has spent a lot of time on this, many hours on this, and so I know, and we appreciate that effort as well.
Many more to come.
Yes, that's true.
Well, I think, yes, for the next 4 years, we need to be attuned, but we don't need to not be attuned after 4 years.
Right.
I feel bad that I didn't understand what was going on until today. Making sure that I know that there's going to be benchmarks that they have to meet, but then we need to be making sure they're accountable for those benchmarks. So we continue to be competitive, and we've not been competitive for a while.
And I'm excited for you all to meet in the future the partners. Because you see some of our partners supporting us, but the other partners around the table are just as remarkable. And both their experiences, the successes they've created, their excitement around this project, the expertise that they bring, this is world-class work. And it's what we should expect for everything we do at this university. They'll be here in February.
So I think, you know, one thing that I'm hearing, and Julian, you might have expertise in this, but this is a board that hasn't had this under our purview. So as you said, it touches every part of the institution, so that includes the board and perhaps us, which part of the board is reporting to and what things we'd like to see reported out. What do we need to see to make sure that we're on top of it on an ongoing basis, what those meetings might be, because we've got to figure that out as well.
So one of the things I've been thinking about just in terms of governance is, Melissa, you do have the best, most exciting committee, but you also may get housing in the future. And so I do, and that will create additional oversight from the board's perspective. So not just students, but Melissa's like, oh.
I'm
concerned. I want to be
overseeing
it. So,
Julian, I was going to say, I think these are the right questions to be asking. We're very focused on not just governance, but also quality assurance too, and what that looks like across housing and also other auxiliaries. So, as we bring on these partners, how are we making sure that we're reporting out on that they're meeting the objectives, and then really enforcing the agreements that we have with them? I think there's a lot of value to be found there. So I want to just reassure you all that we're thinking about that and we're going to have a plan for it. And then in terms of engagement, we've talked broadly about, you know, the February meeting and the May meeting. But I think in the interim, we want to make sure that you all are able to review things as they progress, the financing package, and then also get report outs of performance as we move forward. So that'll be added right into our plan.
Yeah, that'd be important for everybody.
I may be jumping forward to the February meeting, but in our preliminary working session, we talked about cash flows. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, understand, off balance sheet and so forth. But I ask you, Mark, specifically, your comfort level with the cash flow in the project. Could you?
Yeah. There's a few things, I think, in there that are worth sharing. So, number one, as your financial advisor, I have a fiduciary responsibility. That is a industry requirement. I lose my licenses. I lose my ability to do my job if I don't honor the fiduciary responsibility that I have to my clients. So, that's number one. Number two, I'm a skeptical person by nature. In fact, my wife would tell you that part of my process, really of anything she asks me to do, is to first list all of the reasons why it can't be done. And then once I get those out of my system, then we figure out a way to get it done. And so very early on in this process, I think President Caboni mentioned the possibility of pursuing a P3. And I was at that point very skeptical that a P3 of the scope that he was talking about could be achieved without there having to be massive subsidization by university general revenues. And so that's where I started, right, as we began this process. I was coming in, I said it to Susan, But as we went through this process, and I have dug into the model that the developers have provided. And Julian and I have worked many, many, many hours on it. And not just taking Gilbane's word for it or their financing team's word for it. You know, we're trying to do everything we can to sort of independently verify all of their numbers. I have completely gone to the other end of the spectrum. I am now very confident that we can finance this project using this model in a manner not only that doesn't use university revenues, that should return revenues to the university. And again, I will point back then to my fiduciary responsibility. I can't say those sorts of things if I don't actually believe them to be true. Now, that's not to say that this is a 40-year project, right? Things are going to happen down the road that will change the financial model that we're looking at. Things will be different, and the numbers that we have looked at are very preliminary, but I feel good about the debt numbers, the debt service numbers. We verified those with Baird's underwriting desk who does the same sort of work all across this country. On the operating expense side, you know, we've done deep dives into those. We've looked back at SLF budgets to make sure that what they're proposing is reasonable. We've built out a model that allows us to change occupancy levels at all of the residence halls individually, not just sort of a campus-wide occupancy level, but individually, to look at the various financial impacts of those. So, yes, I feel very good about, and again, saying straight away that these numbers are still preliminary, things are going to change, but I do feel very good about it.
Thank you. You know, Philip mentioned risk. Sorry, Richard Bale mentioned risk. And yes, there's risk associated with this. This is a big project. It's bold. It's what you all hired me to do. But there is a much larger risk to the future of this institution in doing nothing. If we don't do the work that's before us and we maintain what we have today, we will not be competitive in the marketplace. As a matter of fact, we will continue to be challenged at convincing students that the WKU experience, including housing, is transformative. It's a transformative experience in the classroom, in the social events, in everything that we do. But our gap right now is on that housing. And we're going to work to fix it. And with all of those in alignment, create what I argue is the best undergraduate experience in the Commonwealth. Barna.
Will there be some development opportunities here that might not otherwise have been here?
Absolutely.
$300 million's a lot, but.
Absolutely.
A portion of that is the defeasement of the Student Life Foundation debt. And all of that. The project is a sizable project, but in preliminary designs, there might be the ability to have not just 1,000-bed hall, but houses within that hall, say seven of them, that each also might be a naming opportunity.
And on the point of the refinancing, on the point of the refinancing the existing Student Life Foundation debt, I do want to point out that that is something that was going to have to happen anyway at the Student Life Foundation level. On the 2017 bonds that financed construction of Hilltopper, and on the 2019 bonds, which financed construction of Norman Regents, those were going to all have to be refinanced anyway. And so, and those were also still going to just be supported by the housing revenues. So in that regard, this is not any different than that. And the risks, I think, that exist with this model also already exist with the Student Life Foundation model, which is, what if occupancy isn't high enough? That's the big one, right? If occupancy doesn't support the debt, who's responsible for paying that? That exists under both of these arrangements, but the university retains control in this one. And to me, that is the biggest advantage, is that all of the control returns to the university level. And perhaps the return of excess funds to the university as well.
Julian? Yeah, one thing to add.
I was just wanting to mention that there is certainly the opportunity for naming rights or development on this, as well as the application of other funds like the SLF reserve, but we have not assumed any of that. So the budget that we've proposed now is conservative. And I think it's we want to do it that way to make sure we pressure tested this deal, and it wouldn't be a requirement that the university, you know, buy down any of the debt, but it wouldn't hurt. And I think that if we had development, then it would return that university through surplus that we could deploy.
I do believe that's one of the things, your point that you and I discussed in one of our workshops, that I have these concerns about the existential risk facing higher education, that those risks are there. This just gives us more control over this too. Face those risks with a better housing offering, at least. But those risks are there under SLF as well.
Anybody else have any other questions, comments?
I just have a comment, Madam Chair. I appreciate the time that everybody has
given me to let me educate myself on this, yourself included, Mark, Julian, Andrea and I have had a lot of discussions. She's answered a lot of the questions that I've had. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with all of you all, and I appreciate the time that you all have taken to meet with us numerous times and go over this. Had opportunity to look into the partner. The partner is a very established entity. It's been around a long time. During that time, you know, they've got a lot of successes. So based on that, based on the assurances that I've had, I think it's the path forward. You know, we're in a position where we don't have very many options, but this looks like the best option we have.
And to Rita Town's point, one of the things I continue to commit to the university community and to the board in this is complete transparency. This is something we all have to understand. We're going to be clear with all of you. We're going to answer every question. The entire leadership team is committed to as many question answering sessions, Zoom sessions, whatever we need to do to ensure, both more important than comfort, to me, is actually understanding. And this is a complex effort. I'm excited for all the folks around my leadership team who've gotten to grow their expertise because they've gotten to participate in this. I had the great fortune to do this with a $350 million project at the University of Kansas as part of the leadership team that did a P3. More pieces, more complex, but also quite transformative. And so this is not just good for the institution. I think it's a terrific leadership opportunity and growth opportunity for our team and for our board to come to understand what other universities in the state have used to their advantage that we're going to as well now.
Anybody else? Any other questions, comments, discussion? Okay, there being none, then I will take a motion to approve the pre-development agreement with Gilpin.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Thank you all very much for your time today and explanation, further explanation, and all the time we've spent prior to this and learning more about the project. I think it's going to be a great day.
Thank you. As always, it's an honor.
Okay, thank you. And so moving forward, we have Susan. Oh, I'm sorry. This is going to be Andrea. To talk about an authorization of lease property.
Yes, so this is a request to approve a lease agreement with property known as Campus Flats, adjacent to campus. It's near the softball field. This is a 2-year lease term. This will provide flexibility and a quality option for our students. But phase one of the project will entail demolition of Hugh Poland and Douglas Keene. That would be the site of the new project. So when those buildings come offline, we want to provide some additional housing opportunities for students. So Campus Flats is comprised of 4-bedroom, 2-bath apartments, 288 beds total. So this is a 2-year lease term with options to extend for additional 1-year periods if we need the additional capacity.
If I could add to that, for our current students who live in Campus Flats, they will have the ability to continue to reside in Campus Flats. And I think there's going to be a discount for those who are already current residents and want to renew. So for some of the concern around student displacement, that won't be part of the conversation.
How many beds are Douglas Keene and Hugh Bowman?
Seven.
And you said Campus Flats is
288.
Keene and Poland or not? You may have seen why today.
Yeah. For sure.
You said how many beds are in Campus Flats?
288. Pursuant to the lease, we will have the same student experience. Students living in campus flats will have the same student living experience they would have on campus, complete with hall director, RAs, security, all of this. And the apartment complex will be leased exclusively to students.
So similar to what the Hyatt Place experience is now.
Are we still going, well, you probably don't know. Are we still going to be able to charge what we would at Douglas King Hugh Poland, or are we going to charge
more? There's a discounted rate for students who are currently residing at campus flats, but it's going to be priced more commensurate with our Kentucky Street apartments, maybe not quite at that rate, but not the same rate they would, that we would charge for Poland and Keene. I think preference will be given for upper class students for the apartments. So, I mean, similar to what we do with Kentucky Street apartments. Holland and Keene are typically freshmen.
So it's kind of all going to be rearranged.
That's right.
Okay. Again.
Again.
But essentially, people are being shuffled up.
Yeah.
People that would be on campus upperclassmen are now going to be off campus upperclassmen. But like I say, off campus, like at campus flats. So then, theoretically, everyone gets shuffled up to a nicer residence hall. Yeah.
Yes.
Anybody have any questions, comments? Okay. Then I will take a motion to authorize the lease. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. All right, and that is all of our existing items of business. I just had one, I guess, item of business that I wanted to discuss. We had recently had written evaluations of President Caponi, as we do every year. Toward the end of the year, not the school year, but the end of the actual year, we received the evaluations back. They were very thoughtful. I appreciated everybody's comments, a lot of comments, and the evaluations were very good, and I went over them in great detail and discussed with President Caponi, and everything was very positive, and it just, you know, reflects hard work, especially this year, and your dedication to the university. So,
thank you, Bridget Wells.
And tomorrow we've got the college recognition ceremonies, bright and early in the morning, starting at 8 a.m. Anybody else have any new
things? One additional thing.
Yes.
There have been some questions around regent engagement and looking at the strategic plan, and that will occur in the spring semester. And I have asked two of our community members to co-chair that effort. Dean Corinne Murphy from her College of Education has graciously agreed to add that to her plate, as has Bryson Davis in our financial aid office to co-chair that together. And so they will begin working, hopefully not over the break, but as soon as we return from break, at putting those subcommittees together, beginning the work to organize ourselves as an institution to re-examine the strategic plan and think about where it may be tweaked. And the reason we waited until now is because we shared with campus and the board yesterday the reaffirmation of our accreditation with no reports for the next decade, a tremendous accomplishment of our entire campus community. Recognize Beth Lavis for her tremendous effort in the steering committee and everybody who put countless hours in on that. It's a grueling effort that sometimes goes unnoticed, but it's crucially important for our university. So a great way to end the semester and to celebrate tomorrow all the reasons we do what we do every other day of the year.
Great news. Okay. And being nothing further, then we are adjourned.